shame on me. Every time I researched how long the drives would take, I did it like evening my time. So it was middle of the night in England. So there's no traffic. And then every time we actually did it, it was like an hour longer for each of the long trips.
Oopsie.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 541 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Mr. Foz Mamoon, and from afar, Mr. Seth Miller.
I'm not back yet.
We can't call you Right Honorable.
No.
John Alton corrected us.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. I love that there's rules.
Well, there should be.
You came up.
Can't just walk around telling people you're a doctor and expect them to call you that.
Yeah, that's true. Fair enough. And where are you right now? You're in Wales?
No, I have moved on. I'm in the club lounge at the Sheraton Heathrow.
Are you guys flying back tomorrow?
Yeah, we're on an early morning flight. So we had a wedding last night up in the Midlands, drove back down to London area today, and are flying out. One actually interesting thing I don't understand is I understand the congestion zone charging on a rental car, like you pay it. There's also the low emission zone and the ultra low emission zone areas. And apparently the area around Heathrow is in that. And so I think I have to pay that for returning the rental car and possibly the day I picked it up also, but I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they added Heathrow like in the last year or so. They extended the zone to include Heathrow.
Is that all done by camera?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
So I guess there's a website I'm supposed to log on to and pay it, but I don't know. It's unclear, and I definitely didn't do it the day I picked it up. So,
or will the rental just charge you?
I assume if they do that, well, it's Hertz. So I assume if they do that, they'll first arrest me and then charge me an insane amount of money to do it.
Say that you stole the car?
Yeah, I stole the emission zone.
All right, let's talk about geopolitics in the jet age.
So, yeah. You put this on the list. I don't remember. It was after last week's episode. I don't remember how we got here.
I think it's the Iranian strikes and what it did to airspace, because it's so interesting what it did, right? They closed Iraq, they closed Iran, and then they ended up closing Qatar a day or two later after the United States struck Iran.
And Israel was also closed.
Israel was closed. I think we saw, I mean, Syria is still closed as far as I know. Like, it's, you don't overfly Syria. And it's just caused a lot of weird diversions or roundabout ways of getting places.
Yeah, there were definitely a lot of diversions. I think one of the interesting things I saw was Emirates put out a release saying none of their planes diverted, even though UAE airspace at the same time as the Qatar closure. So after the U.S. struck Iran, Iran struck back, quote unquote, and fired missiles towards U.S. bases in the Middle East. And so the UAE and Qatar areas were affected. And so that's where that was. And it was interesting. There was a press release or email, whatever, came out from Qatar or from Emirates, basically saying they didn't have to cancel any of their flights. Or I think they said they didn't even divert anything. There were some delays, but nothing in the UAE. There was, I think, something to Syria or Jordan, like canceled and then came back quickly. But it was, there's a lot of effects.
The way that it was stated by them, though, reminded me of Baghdad Bob. There is no U.S. presence in Baghdad. Behind him, you can see the tanks rolling by.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah, we're not delayed. No delays. No delays. Don't look at the flight status board. No delays.
Resumes after minimal disruptions. I'm reading through it again now. Suspended flights only to areas directly impacted while maintaining everything else. Amman and Beirut were briefly suspended. Everything else remained operational.
Yeah, and Amman and Beirut are interesting because they, like, Royal Jordanian has a flight from Amman to Beirut.
All the way around.
It went all the way around to the south of Israel, up and over the Med, and then back down into Beirut. It was interesting. They did that for a few days, actually, to completely avoid. And I think part of it is, like, people are using ballistic missiles, and so it's somewhat unpredictable when they come out of the atmosphere or out of the stratosphere and back into the atmosphere. So interesting things to watch. I noticed the Paris flight and Perth London flight both
turned around, right?
They turned around. One of them got like 6 hours in and then turned around. One turned around maybe 2 hours into flight. So
I think it's the Paris that got like off the coast of India and had to go back.
Yeah. I think they're like, well, we can't make this work. So yeah. Were you gonna say something, Foss?
I was gonna say that just has to suck.
Yeah. I think there's been a couple of flights now where people have gone basically halfway, and then they turned around because of this.
Oof.
Like 10 hours in, you know, so, or 8 hours in. So. New plus points options. So this is United news. People who don't know, plus points are a currency you can use for upgrades. I think they've in the recent years become harder to use. I think that's the perception. And United, I guess last year announced that they were going to be making some changes and adding some benefits, to plus points. And they've now announced what they're doing. And the options are you can exchange your plus points for travel bank cash, bonus miles, premier qualifying points, which are like their elite miles, premier qualifying flights, or you can gift premier status. And so they have a breakdown of what all of these cost. And, yeah. What do you guys think of this?
Boo?
Boo? Are you using this?
It's not a good value at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, the value bits were super interesting, I thought. Just looking through where those, like, what the options are. Let's find this link here. Travel bank cash, 100 plus points is good for $200 in travel bank cash. Mm. That same 100 plus points is theoretically a long haul upgrade from discounted economy to Polaris. Assuming you can find space and all those other problems.
No. 80.
And then some.
Yeah. I mean, they value those 80 points, those 80 plus points is at $160. For an upgrade, basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that you can give away elite status with it is interesting.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. So it's 440 to give someone platinum.
Right.
Or 600 to give someone 1K. So.
Or 100 for gold.
I want to do the math here real quick. I can't do this.
Okay.
Let's see. If they value them at, we said that $2.
160. Yeah.
So they value. Yeah.
880 or 1200.
Yeah, 1200. They value 1K at $1,200.
Of travel bank cash. I mean, I have 100, right? Which travel bank cash makes you also spend more money because you book a ticket and then you generally pay more than whatever the number was.
Yes.
But still.
Still. Yeah. Foz, you're not going to take any advantage of any of these?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good, look, it's options if you have plus points to expire. Yeah. Otherwise, it's not a good use of your points.
And your hope is people will use these for these so that you get the upgrades.
Yes, of course. Oh.
The premier qualifying flights is interesting because it's a weird math that they're doing there. So you can get two PQFs for 160 plus points or four for 320. That's kind of wild to me because it might be better just to go fly up on a flight or two. And yeah, say,
not everyone can do that. But again, if you have plus points expiring.
Yes. And you're short.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the max. They'll only let you do it for four flights. So it's interesting. Very interesting.
But does that help you get your four minimum flights that you need on United?
Oh, that's a good point. So if you fly a lot of partners.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could be it. Cool. Go ahead.
I don't know. I just say I look at these numbers and like none of them make sense.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Remind me again, how many plus points by the time you qualify for 1K, how many plus points do you have in hand?
360.
Is it 360?
Because you get 40 at platinum and then 320 at 1K, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
So, yeah, 360.
And then you earn more every 25 or 50,000 miles, right?
No, it's dollars.
Or dollars now, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Every 2,000 PQPs, you get something.
I think it's 180, maybe.
No, you get 40.
Oh, is it only another 40?
Yeah. Yeah. You earn increments of 40.
I gotcha. It's been a long time since I've earned more plus points.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good to have options, I guess, for people that can't figure out how to use upgrades, but or get upgrades.
I was wrong. It is on that page. 40 plus points when you reach platinum, 280 when you reach 1K. So 320.
320.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And for every 3,000 PQP, you get 20 more. Only 20.
Is it 20? I thought it was 40.
If you only earn them when you have when you get status, you can only get status when you get four segments. Can you actually use them to get the segments?
That's what I was saying.
Is this an elite status Ouroboros where you have to get yourself to get this? Like it's an impossible loop?
I mean, but like there are people who do not step leave the country, right? And for those people, plus points generally likely are not clearing, to be fair. So it's not a bad, it's not bad. It addresses a need for those people who have plus points that end up likely going expired.
Yeah, I'm, right. Again, like options, good to have, but it's sort of got to wonder if it's who's going to use it and where the value becomes in.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So
let's talk about Iberia and their Project 2030 Plus.
Yeah. They've got grand plans for the end of the decade and beyond. They put out they had a media event during the Paris Air Show, day after the Paris Air Show. That was interesting. But they announced their plan to grow to 70 long haul aircraft, up from like 35 or so today. Which was interesting because the current order book doesn't have enough for that. And the current order book was assuming some of the new 330neos from IAG were going to be replacing existing, not growing. So they definitely need more airplanes. Let me pull up the notes. They also talked about a whole bunch of new markets in the United States or North America. It seems like either Atlanta or they put dots on the map in a terrible, misguided way. Increasing from 45 to 70 long-haul planes.
Wow.
By the mid-2030s, so it's not by the end of the decade, but still, they got some work to do to get there. They also, 45, they need to order 11 more and not retire anything 10 years from now for that to happen. So I don't know how you do that, since some of these planes are getting barn old. The markets in North America seems to be, I think, Charlotte or Atlanta, and I lean towards Charlotte because of American and One World. There's Philadelphia, and then it seems like maybe Toronto and Montreal, which going for both of those was a little surprising to me.
Going head to head with Air Canada is definitely a bad choice.
Yeah, and I guess you put 321 XLRs or LRs on the XLRs probably for those, because it can reach same as Boston basically. So they don't necessarily have to be big planes, but it is a little funny to see the talk of the XLR says they're long haul fleet, which obviously they are, but I know it's just the single aisle as part of that big shift.
What do they, I mean, why do you see them, I get why they go One World, but do they expand to Barcelona or do they just keep everything in Madrid?
So the goal here is to make Madrid a massive hub. Bigger than it already is. And so there's talk about a new lounge in Terminal 4 alongside the existing ones, quote, a leading European hub, unquote, for aviation. There's some interesting plans there, but I think they've still got the level long-haul stuff for and welling for Barcelona, but everything else is Iberia-related that's going to really focus on Madrid.
I mean, could some of this be driven by overflying London? And moving, pushing people through Madrid because Madrid has a lot more capacity and growth potential than Heathrow does.
Sure. I guess the question is where and how, but yes.
Well, I mean, this is a question to follow up on what Foz said. Like a lot of people have pointed out, Madrid is somewhat out of the way if you're going to certain parts of Europe, chunks of Europe.
Most, in fact. From the US, not so, South America.
Yeah, but so are people willing to do that to avoid Heathrow? Or is Heathrow, does it not matter? Like Heathrow is just at capacity. We're not doing anything else. You got to go through Madrid.
Well, I mean, with all the flurry around Italy, Madrid's a reasonable connection spot.
Yeah, that's true.
Beyond, if they decide to add things like Africa or Middle East or even India, it becomes much more viable.
Yeah, Madrid, Charlotte to Rome is 4,800 miles. Charlotte to Heathrow to Rome is 4,891 and Charlotte Madrid Rome is 4,937. So it's really only 40 miles difference. Those three are almost identical.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You're within 5%. So, then that's from Charlotte, obviously different places, different, you know, SKUs, but, yes, to Italy and South. And they also are talking about a ton of South America stuff. Like they want to compete with, to an extent, Lisbon and TAP on traffic going to and from South America, although TAP is much more focused on Brazil than the rest of the continent. But that's, those are markets, and possibly some of the Caribbean stuff too. Those are markets where you could easily, to Faz's point, see pulling some lower yield traffic out of London and pushing the connections that way, saving the higher yield stuff for O&D nonstop service from London or higher value Northern European connections.
Yeah. Are they part of a JV by any chance?
Yep.
Or is it so it's part of the BA IAG one? Okay. Yeah, that makes it, that makes it interesting because they're going to focus on JV hubs if they can.
Right. But anyway, I think it's, it's good for them. It's a, we'll say, bold plan.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. The idea that they're going to like double their loyalty program over the next several years is amusing.
I mean, it's a lot of planes, even in mid 2030s to get them. That's a lot of planes and expecting a lot of Airbus, I think, to deliver.
Yeah. There's also the question of, do they need more short haul planes to run that feed? And, over up front, John, or actually Finn, wrote the story, but, their story about this suggests that when asked about the short haul fleet, the response was that the fleet as it exists is sufficient to feed those long haul growth plans. So I don't know how that'll happen.
Oh, gotcha. Yep. Let's talk about Delta and their moves at Seattle and just some general things that they're changing as well.
Yeah. So follow up on, a week ago, I guess we were talking about Alaska Airlines running Rome. Delta has decided not to take that sitting down. They're going to take, they're going to put one of their 330 Neos into Seattle and have it run more transatlantic runs. So they'll alternate, I think it's 3 days a week to Barcelona and 4 days a week to Rome or the other or vice versa. But so yeah, Rome's going to have a ton of capacity next summer.
Is there that much demand to go from Seattle to Rome? Steve and I were talking about this the other day. I don't see it.
I don't think there's two wide body. Well, it's basically one a day with these numbers, right? Four, maybe it's eight weekly, four and four. But so is there that much demand in peak summer? Maybe. And so I guess the question is, how seasonal are these routes?
I mean, we look at how much capacity Rome's been added just in the last 2 years, right? San Francisco, Chicago,
Denver,
and Charlotte, I think, right?
I think you're right.
That's a lot of additional lift. Like, is Rome the new Orlando?
I think in the summer it is.
Okay.
Right. I don't think people should go there during the summer. I think it's hot and disgusting. It's a lovely place to visit. It gets hot, even shoulder season. So take that with a grain of salt. If you're looking, I got a great gelateria that I would recommend. But let me know.
I can share that. In about 3 weeks, I think I'm supposed to fly through Rome.
Okay.
I booked Philly Dulles Rome. And to speak of the lack of demand, when I booked it 4 weeks ago, PZ was open.
So it's not zero, but it's definitely lower. Right.
Yeah. Like even the agent, when I was talking to them, like, I don't know how you found this. I'm like, I don't know either, but I'm not going to look, I'm not going to question it.
Are you staying or are you moving onward?
I'm moving onward.
Okay.
I'm not stupid enough to stay.
I've enjoyed my visits to Rome, but it gets crowded in the summer.
Yeah, I love Rome. July and August, not the time to go.
Yeah, but everybody seems to. So here we are.
And Delta announced some other things, right? Like, so they also said that they're going to retrofit the A330s.
Yep, they're going to get a Delta One suite,
but not the 76s.
The 763s will not get it because they are slated for retirement too soon to make that a worthwhile investment.
Okay.
I don't know about 764s.
I wonder where they're flying those these days. I'd have to look, but
the threes or the fours?
The fours.
The fours are a lot of London.
Really? Like at JFK, Boston?
Yeah.
Those? Okay. And then what about Austin? They seem to have some thoughts on Austin and what they want to do.
It seems like they want to grow again. I don't know. That's a, we'll have to see where that ends up. But
yeah,
I guess cool, right? They had a Dallas hub once. Why not Austin?
The difference being Dallas had a lot more capacity.
It's true.
Fair. 764s for Delta are flying transcons mostly. And then Atlanta Heathrow, JFK Paris, Atlanta Paris, Atlanta Munich, Nice, JFK Barcelona, Detroit Munich,
JFK Geneva. It's pretty spread out then.
Yeah. It looks like they're basically JFK based and do some Atlanta turns from time to time.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, with Austin, there's actually been some stories recently about Austin's contraction. Its center as a tech hub just after COVID has kind of softened. And they're seeing like the housing market not collapse, but it's definitely struggling a little bit. So this will be interesting to see how Delta does out of there. If they try to grow it, I'm sure they're watching the news, you'd think. But that airport just can't handle it either until they expand. Like it's full.
Expansion's coming though, right?
Eventually. I don't know when it's going to be done, but they're working on it.
What's worse, Austin or Seattle?
I would put my hands on Seattle. Like I think Seattle's, you just don't fly through Seattle if you can avoid it.
Okay. I agree, but I think Austin has a little more terminal space than Seattle does.
That's fair. Like on the north, not the north side, the east side, there's definitely more. Like where Delta's gates are, it's more open because it's the newer side.
And they have the ability, they at least have space to grow.
Yes. Seattle's constrained by, a freeway and home.
The problem Austin has is the main terminal, the central terminal, is just too small for the number of people that need to go through it.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. And, I mean, you could argue that about Seattle, too. Like, the head house at Seattle is not made for the number of people going through it.
No. I just choose to avoid both.
Yeah. And then they're going to have an A350 high J config? They already have one.
We talked about this. They announced it a while ago. It's the one that was their like higher max takeoff weight and was started some of their more recent deliveries that went to, I want to say, South Africa was the first market, because they were longer flights. They both needed more business class seats and they needed lower total weight on board, which we get with, fewer total seats. It now seems like the fleet is fully going to move in that direction.
The entire A350 fleet.
Yeah, and they're starting with the LATAM config plane. So those have been the very low J and less Delta One product.
Yep.
Shall we say? So they're doing that now.
But remember, Stephen, they only have 32 seats, okay, right? For their quote unquote flagship plane. When you compare it to like United, right? They've got 48 or 60, depending, or 50 or 60, depending on which one you look at.
So how many will they be getting? Have they said how many seats they're getting?
Yeah, but I don't remember.
I'm trying to find it. Let's see. Can't find the seat number.
Now, the question that I would have is, are they shrinking economy or premium economy?
I think it shrinks economy. I mean, I'm reading Seth's post on the.
Yeah. It goes from 32 to 40 J, goes from what you really lose. Yeah, you lose economy. You go, and a little premium economy. It goes from 48 to 40 for plus premium select. And then comfort plus stays the same at 36, and then you lose 23 economy seats.
So they still, of the three majors, they still have the smallest premium cabin on their flagship plane.
Yes. I mean, American definitely has more. American has 40 on the 789, doesn't it?
On the new ones, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And that's a relatively small plane.
Yeah, and the 77, I think on the
300. Oh, it's going to be way bigger.
Yeah, they have what's...
Well, it's going to be bigger when they take first out.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be closer to United with 60 seats.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, 40 is good. I just, they probably should have gone with something a little bit higher even some of these
Americans
that they have.
Yeah. American's 51 on the new 789. And is 52 on its current, it's 70 on the new 77W.
So American will have even more than United.
Yeah, but on a bigger plane.
No, United is 60 on the 777-300.
Oh, yes. Also that.
Yeah.
Fly a deal. Cebu. What's the news?
This is an interesting one. They've got a partnership now where they're going to borrow planes from each other for peak season service. So back in April, I was talking with Steve Greenway, who's the CEO of Fly a Deal, and he was talking about their A330neo order, which is, deliveries in a few years now, but they're going to add wide body fleet and they're going for a super high density configuration, nine across on the 330, a lot of seats on board. And to make sure it was going to work, he and the team actually went out to Cebu Pacific in the Philippines and looked at their planes, actually took some flights on them, and made sure and all that stuff. But it turns out, as part of that experience and being over there visiting, they also negotiated a wet lease deal so that they're going to get some Cebu planes to move large volumes of people around for Hajj and such. And also in the very short term, they've got a couple 320s flying now in Saudi Arabia, domestic stuff as wet lease. And so it's a fun look. If nothing else, it's sort of the Cebu yellow belly of the plane and flywheel sort of purple on top. Reminds me a little of it's Allegiant and Tui, maybe someone in Europe used to like share planes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, so fly a deal, I mean, a wet lease, right? Are they also giving, because that means the crew as well.
That's a good question. I thought it was wet lease. It may be, it may be a dry lease. It may just be the planes.
Okay. And so, and then in the peak season for, is there a peak season for the Philippines? I'm guessing that's maybe winter, or when would that be? And are they getting planes then from fly a deal?
I believe that was part of the expectation.
Gotcha. Okay.
So.
I mean, it seems like a cool idea, right? We don't need all these planes all the time, but we do need them for peak Hajj or peak tour season. So we'll borrow them from you and come to some kind of usage agreement for each.
Yeah.
It's nice. That A330 description you gave, though, 9 across, sounds awful.
Yeah.
Like, not good. Yeah, cool. For those who don't know, Seth or Foz was in Portland. When was that, Foz? It was Thursday? This past
Thursday. Thursday.
And Foz was here for a half day. We hung out for a little bit, and then he was supposed to leave and got stuck because of weather and other issues on his return, and stayed and then took the red eye. So we hung out for quite a bit. I want to know what you think of the new PDX terminal.
How long did they close that building for?
Like how long was it like under construction?
Yeah.
Like not being fully used? Multiple years.
I don't know what they did in those years.
I mean, they put the cool roof on, man.
Yeah, okay. That's nice. But what does it really do?
Yeah.
Right? Like, all they really changed was the head of house.
Yes.
The only positive thing that came out of it, honestly, is the fact that you can now walk between A, B, C, and D, E without having to go through security again.
Because they fixed that. Yeah, they fixed that issue.
I'd say a single security checkpoint was a big part of the move, right?
Well,
they do. Yeah, they still have two. They just have connected the two sides, so you don't have to go out and back.
Okay. I thought maybe it's a future state thing. There's something else that's still supposed to happen.
Well, I mean, they're supposed to rebuild the ways to get down into baggage claim, which is supposedly coming, so that you can do it directly from the exit. Like, they'll feed the traffic down rather than you go out into the main building, then you go down, which should clear up some of the congestion. I think what they've done is they've created the illusion that there's fewer people waiting at a ticketing counter with the way that they've redesigned it, Fuzz. Like, I feel like that was the big reason, because it used to be you went to United and you were right up against the glass that was at the drop off point. Like, so as it got busier, it looked very busy, and people got backed up and it created traffic. And now you have to like move in to the airport to do your check in.
Now you move in and you go stand at a computer as you look at it, trying to figure out what it wants you to do.
Yes. And I mean, I think the roof is nice. I think, like you and I found, Foz and I were going to meet up and talk, and there's no tables outside security. So there's very few. There's like 6 tables. But there's nowhere to like hang out. If you're outside security, there's like 1 coffee shop. And the big thing is like, everybody's like, oh, it's got local stuff and it's locally priced. Yeah. Well, if you're behind security, that's great. But none of that's been improved. Like, none of that's changed really. So the gates are all the same.
The roof is nice. Absolutely. The roof is nice. The problem is it doesn't add much function.
Yes.
Right. And like
we're but guys, it's the best airport in the United States.
This is what I was going to bring up, is like, what gets us there? Like road, like. Some of the things I think they dropped the ball on is, yeah, it's got street pricing. So you don't get charged more because you're at an airport, which is great. I think that is awesome. But the gates, I mean, nothing's changed at the gates. Like, there's still very crowded gate areas. I think Southwest is probably a little better, their area of the terminal, because that is new. But like United, Delta, those are all old gate areas.
They would have been better off investing in fixing the international arrival situation than fixing the head of house.
I don't think they're serious about getting international arrivals, because that is going to be the biggest thing that keeps airlines from flying in there. Like, having to force people to use the bus system to go through immigration.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. And what's funny is, like, when I was flying out, the Volaris flight had come in, and that mid-terminal security checkpoint, so if you're connecting onward, wasn't even open.
Oh, no. It's only open for the BA flight and the Condor flight, I think.
Yeah. So it's like, so if you pretty much fly in on anything else, you have to go all the way out to come back in.
Yep. And maybe KLM. Maybe. I can't, I think it might be, but it depends on what time KLM gets in. I think KLM gets in at like 10:30 or 11. So yeah, I'm with you. I think we talk a big game. It's still a tiny airport too. Like
it's not that tiny when you compare it to a lot of other places. It's like, I would say it's a medium sized airport. It has a lot of room to grow.
Yeah.
But the problem is they're not focused on making it more functional. They're just focused on making it more pretty.
And I flew through Cincinnati 3 weeks ago. That's actually a really cool airport. Like, I kind of like it. It was easy. I didn't like having to go downstairs to exit, but that seems like it's the new norm of going through a tunnel. At least it has a tunnel. It's not train only. But I thought it was actually a lovely little airport. It was great. So I don't get why it's number one. Did you read anything, Seth, that made you think, oh, yeah, that is nice, and I would fly through PDX as the number one airport?
I think that ranking airports like that is a
weird.
I don't want to say it's a futile task, right? Like, no one, with very limited exceptions, people aren't booking travel based on it's the airport amenities or quality. I book to go somewhere, and so I have to get there, and there's, generally speaking, one airport there, and so I book to that airport and from that airport. There are some exceptions to that in, you know, areas that have multiple airports in the city or and such, but you're still talking about schedule price more than not. And there are people, self included, who have made a choice of connection points based on the airport, from time to time. But that's a, like, if I have to go to the West Coast and I want to have food along the way and don't expect the airline to be able to provide that for me, you know, do I stop in Chicago or Denver or Baltimore or, you know, pick this Minneapolis, which of those connection points, assuming generally speaking price and schedule are similar, which of those connection points gets me where I want to be and also gives me an opportunity to get some food along the way?
Chicago.
Right. Tortas. I get it. I know.
Can we talk about that though? Like, those are expensive. Like, if you get a torta and a thing of guacamole and chips, it's like $35. That's insane.
At this point, I've resigned myself to $18 airport sandwiches, so at least it should be a good one.
That's true.
I haven't done the chip. I don't remember what chip and guac cost there, but I haven't ordered that in a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Foz?
I mean, I think it's just, unfortunately, a sign of the times, because one of the problems we have with airports in general is the airport authorities are so busy wanting to take a larger and larger cut
that they're willing to let people charge whatever they want.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah.
Right? You're a captive audience, right? They're extorting them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think last time I was in San Francisco, I was like, wait, what? Some noodles. It was like $27. I was like, this definitely wasn't worth $27, but what else am I going to do?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big proponent of showing up at the airport with a sandwich at this point.
I do too. Listen, I travel with food regularly, but we talked about this when you guys were out in LA. I don't know where you were going, but, right, bring a sandwich out to the Bahamas, right? Bring a sandwich with you because it's better than trying to find something inside LAX.
And you weren't wrong. Like, there's not much in LAX to eat that's decent.
Correct. It's a terrible experience. That's a general rule. But there are also times where, like, I'm working and have to go to the airport and would like to still not starve. So,
yep. Yep, I'm with you. All right. Anything else?
And you guys work harder than me. So.
Oh, please.
You work more hours than me? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know about that either. All right. Anything else you guys want to chat about before we go to the bonus topics?
Nothing for me.
We're good.
Okay. We got for our Patreon subscribers, we got Spirit's Blue Sky objection. JetBlue has some cuts coming. Cape Air news. And Porter, some Porter news. So stick around for that if you're a Patreon subscriber. If you're not, thank you for listening to the show. We appreciate you. Leave us a comment. Leave us a comment on Blue Sky. We do like to hear from you. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.